All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're now shifting our focus over to the energy sector as we're chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Perspectives Group. We're going to cover the recent pop in the natural gas price, oil continuing to be stuck in its range, but that range and that price right now, a little under $80 a barrel. We're also going to be talking on the stock front about a pretty significant merger that was announced just last week between Silver Bow Resources and Crescent Energy. Dan, let's kick it off with the natural gas price. Look, natural gas was really just stuck at a pretty depressed price there for most of this year, trending right around, well, under $2, even dropping down to about $1.50 on a number of different occasions. But ever since kind of the tail end of April and the beginning of May, the price has moved almost straight up. The price came into May just under $2. We're already up to a high of $2.80. As we're recording this, we're about $2.78. This is a big change for the natural gas price. Also filters directly into the natural gas stocks. But Dan, take us through. What do you think some of the key drivers are for this natural gas move higher, breaking out of its range?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's way ahead of where I thought it was going to be a month ago. I was using $1.75 in all my forecasts for the second quarter. Now it looks like I'm going to have to raise that to $2.50 or maybe even higher. We could be headed over $3 by the end of the quarter. If we're going up like 10 cents a day, it's pretty impressive. I think what's happened is, first of all, we're getting much hotter weather across the South. So we're ramping up all of our natural gas-fired power plants across the South that we call peaking plants. Some of these really are even don't run at all during the winter. Those peaking plants are firing up. So you're getting a second period of high demand for natural gas for power generation. And then I think also this first big LNG facility down in Plaquemines, Louisiana, looks like it is going to come online here in another couple of months. That's going to add 2 BCF a day of demand. But I think the big story that's now getting around, I was at an energy conference. I spoke on Sunday the 19th in the afternoon. I was the opening speaker. And then the next guy after me brings up about how this artificial intelligence data centers are going to just be electricity hogs. And they are planning to build like 20 or 30 of these just in the state of Virginia. And they're trying to fast track some nuclear facilities up there. And when's the last time we built a new nuclear power plant? But the way I see it, looking at this thing, if you need to increase the electricity supply by 25 or 30% over the next 12-18 months, is what the only way to do it is with natural gas fired power plants. And even then, you're going to have to really kick it into high gear building these things. And I've heard that the AI companies are contacting the gas producers directly, see if they can get direct supply contracts to lock in the volumes and stuff like that. And they're literally talking about putting their own power plants right next to these data centers. So I don't know how this is all going to physically get done in time, but it's really become a big story just in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And so that's what it looks like to me. It's driving this.
Yeah, Dan, it's fascinating because we've made the exact same point with you on different shows about all the energy that would be needed for electric vehicles. If everybody starts going from internal combustion engines to plugging into the grid, if you start taking all of your lawnmowers and weed whackers and turn them into battery powered things that you need to charge. Well, then there's also the cryptocurrency miners that are going to be power hogs as they do all that, the data centers. Now there's all these AI data centers. I think maybe it's the straw that broke the camel's back. And finally, people are seeing, wow, we're just going to need a lot more electricity. And that gas is sitting front and center. Do you think that this is a sustainable price rise, though, because it moved up so quickly? Or do you expect it to maybe level back off a little bit? Or could we just keep punching higher here? What's your outlook on where the pricing trends may go?
Well, when people get past this fear that the storage is going to fill up, and they're building more storage, and we're going to need a lot more natural gas. If our electric power generation really does need to go up by 25-30%, that's huge. And there was a report that just came out from the National Energy Requirement. Anyway, there's some organization that published a report just like a week or so ago that said there's 17 states, including Texas, that are going to be facing potential brownouts and power shortages this summer. already. And even without this, we need to get it together, and windmills are not going to do it. And the wind projects are all getting canceled because of the higher interest rates. They can't handle it. And people have figured this out. They're talking about having to open up some more coal-fired power plants or something to meet the demand. So it can turn really fast. And anybody, you can just go look at a 10, 15 year chart of natural gas, and there's a couple spikes in there to $13. So it's still, even if we went to $5 gas, look at it this way, six MCF of gas has the same power energy content as a barrel of oil. So even at $5, that would be the equivalent to a $30 oil price. So we're just blessed to have in all of North America, we have the lowest power costs, the lowest home heating bills in the world, because we have these massive resources. So we can handle $5, $6 gas, and that's really where it probably needs to go. But the companies themselves, if they just get back to $3.50, $4, I can tell you, they're going to be happy as a clam. Two was a really good year for the gas companies. And for that year, the gas price averaged like $4, and it was a really good year for those companies.
Dan, that's what I wanted to ask you here, is that as much as we've seen this rise in the last, let's call it a month, the natural gas price is pretty much back to where it started the year. And it was only about 2 weeks after the start of the year that it had spiked up to about $3.40. Now, again, the highs can be in the teens with some of these spikes in natural gas. But when it comes to the natural gas companies, I'm sure they're doing better financially right now. But what prices actually does incentivize them and bring in more investors to get them focused on growth and have them feed more natural gas into the market?
Yeah, and EQT and Chesapeake are two of the largest. They are the two largest gas producers in the country. And they have actually choked back some of their wells. And then I follow several other large gas producers like Range Resources, Antero, and they've really reduced their drilling programs for this year. And they're not, and even the ones where they got drilling contracts, they're drilling the wells, they're casing the wells, but they're not completing them until the gas price rebounds. But by rebound, I think once it gets over $3, then they'll bring on production and stuff. They're very profitable at that price. But here's the problem. We have pipeline problems. There's not enough pipeline capacity to take away all of West Texas, all the Permian Basin. The pipes are all full. They can't really produce any more gas. So what we talked about, I think the last time I talked to you guys, there's more and more of the operators talking about putting their own power plants in the field to just use the gas right out of the ground and to generate their electricity within their own field. So they have these modular generating facilities and stuff like that. Generators they can install out there to produce their own electricity, so they're not just giving it away. Several of the companies actually have negative gas prices when you subtract their processing fees. But it's the same way. The largest, most important natural gas resource in North America, in the world actually, is Appalachia, where the Marcellus Shale, Utica Shale are, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and West Virginia. And they are pipeline constrained. They need more pipelines. And they're specifically these AI facilities that are going to be built in Virginia. They're opening up that Mountain Valley Pipeline finally, after the government finally gets out of the way. So that should be opening here pretty soon. And EQT is going to actually be the one, after they're in process of making a merger with a midstream company. So they're going to be the ones control the Mountain Valley Pipeline. But anyway, we can't build production unless there's takeaway capacity, because you have to immediately put these big gas wells up to a pipeline. You can't truck it out of there.
Well, Dan, when you think about the investor opportunity in nat gas, we were asking you a couple months back, is there a contrarian opportunity here? Even despite the move up in gas prices, some of the stocks haven't responded as much as one would expect. Do you still see there being upside in some of the gassers? And is there also opportunity based on the pipeline limitations on some of the energy service companies that relate to the market?
Yeah, but the large gas companies, or gassers we call them, if you take EQT and if you assume that gas is going to consistently be above $4, there's tremendous upside. That stock that's in the 40s now could go into the 60s. I could see 50%, but it's going to start getting around. Hey, actually, this merger that we're talking about, those two companies produce a lot of gas and they have a lot of leases out in the far western half of the Eagle Ford that are really just huge gas reserves out there. Webb County, which sits on the border right between Texas and New Mexico, is a major gas field that even EOG considers it like a world-class gas resource out there. But again, you just got to have some pipelines to bring it all the way to the coast.
Well, and that's the other aspect too, right? Is a lot of these oil companies also have a natural gas component to them, so they benefit from this rise in price as well. But hey, we're a month into this breakout, at least that 3 month trading range that it was in. So if it keeps going, undoubtedly that'll bring in some more money. Let's also talk about oil because that is, again, still stuck in its range right now, trading just under $80 a barrel, $78. It's been fairly stable in terms of price. And at these prices, companies can still generate some nice free cash flow. What is your outlook for the oil price?
Yeah, well, I think the oil price, yeah, I'm using 82.50 now in my second quarter forecast because we did get to 87 and April was up there in 85 range for a while. And unless oil stays down this low, I think we'll be above 80 for the quarter. Then I've got 85 in the second half because we're heading into with Memorial Day weekend here with us now. We're going to be using a lot of transportation fuels. And another thing, they have to use more black oil and summer blend gasoline in the United States. Winter blend gasolines can have up like 10% butane in them and stuff like that, but you can't do that in the summer months. So that alone increases oil demand. And if you look even at the EIA website, they're forecasting that global demand for oil exceeds supply during the entire second quarter. And so inventories will be going around, down around the world. And then they've got it super tight in the second half. Demand cannot exceed supply at some point. You don't have any storage left. So at some point, supply actually caps demand, no matter how high the price, then you start the hard rationing by price. But I'm still pretty bullish on oil and definitely, and even if it stays in the 75 to 80 range, they're very profitable. And the one reason they're profitable is actually completed well costs have come down. We're still got a very low active rig count. We're still down more than 100 rigs per day, and the rig count is what. That's why I don't think U.S. oil production is going to grow much more because just at the current active rig count, we can't do it. But completed well costs have come down because tubular prices, so the casing, the tubing that these wells have to have, has come down in price. You've got adequate amount of completion crews, fracking companies, and stuff have lowered their prices a little bit. All the companies in the first quarter reported to me 5 to even 15% decline in their completed well costs. And there's a new technology that's coming in. This was discussed pretty extensively at this conference I went to last weekend. And these horseshoe wells, I don't know if you've seen that, but these horseshoe wells where they can go drill out a mile and then turn around and come back another mile. And the turn takes a half mile. So just think it's not like a right turn. And they can drill 20,000 feet of horizontal and case that, and it can really reduce the cost because you only have one vertical, you have one vertical hole, so that eliminates like 8,000 feet of casing. If you had to put 2 1-mile long laterals, but you can put a one horseshoe well that does 2 miles worth of lateral, that cuts your cost by 15 or 20% just on the casing.
Well, Dan, let's get into the merger that you sent us over. This is big news. And this is between Crescent Energy Company, traded on the NYSE under the ticker CRGY, and Silver Bow Resources, traded on the NYSE under the ticker SBOW. We've talked about Silver Bow in the past, and you said it was at an attractive valuation. Apparently, Crescent Energy thought so too, and they are merging. And really, it seems 2/3 of the value being in Crescent Energy and about 1/3 in Silver Bow, but they're doing an all shares transaction, and it really creates the second largest operator in the Eagle Ford area of Texas. Walk us through this transaction. Do you like it? What do you see as the synergies here between the two companies coming together in the new pro forma company?
Well, what I really like about it, and both of these stocks were undervalued. Silver Bow was trading at half of my current valuation, and that current valuation was just 4 times operating cash flow. It was free cash flow positive. It's got tons of running room. And my valuation was like $63, and the stock was hanging in the low 30s. So about half of my valuation. I knew about Crescent Energy, but I wasn't modeling. It's not one of my portfolio companies. So I hadn't really looked at it. And I really just started building my model on that one. I'm probably going to put it into our Sweet 16 growth portfolio because both of these companies are aggressive growth. They are Crescent Point is Crescent Energy. I shouldn't say Crescent Point, but Crescent Point, which doesn't exist anymore. They changed their name. So Crescent Energy is backed by a big venture capital outfit, KKR. They put this thing together a few years ago. They got top quality management team, but they've been growing through acquisitions and so SilverBow. So they've both done that and they're both focused on that Eagle Ford play down in South Texas. And when they combine, this thing's going to have like over 250,000 BOE per day of production. Actually, their first quarter production combined was 257,000 BOE per day, 37% oil, 45% natural gas, and 18% NGLs. But about, I think, more than 85% of their revenue came from liquid sales because the gas price is so low. So that's just the way to look at it. But and they have the ability, both companies have shifted their rigs to drill on more oil-prone areas. Combined, they're running, I think, five rigs and three completion crews if you put them together, pro forma it. And they should have steady production growth because they have a lot of a good quality acreage, both of them.
SilverBow Resources, especially though, you sent us some notes from your report on it. And look, it was the smallest company in your Sweet 16 growth portfolio, but I think it might have been the fastest in terms of growth when you look back at what the company's done in the last couple of years and even what they were projecting throughout this year. Take us through the growth that just SilverBow offers this combined company.
Oh yeah. And in today's where everybody wants dividends and free cash flow and stock buybacks. That's the thing now. And I personally have made more money off of aggressive growth companies than any of the bigger ones. The stock went from $5.30 when I put it into the Sweet 16. It's up 619% at $38 now. It's up just this year, 30% year to date. In November, at the end of November, they closed what we call the Chesapeake South Texas acquisition. That's how they labeled it. They bought Chesapeake's entire interest in South Texas. And it's to them, it was a really a transformative deal. It added 30,000 BOE per day of current production and a lot of really high quality drilling locations. And in fact, in their first quarter, they reported some of the best well results on these new wells. And just as a standalone company, I was very excited about it. The proven reserves at the end of last year, this included the stuff they acquired from Chesapeake, their proven reserves, 446 million BOE, 63% natural gas, 21% crude oil, and 16% NGLs. And based on SEC pricing guidelines, which use a very low gas price, by the way. So both oil and gas prices are now higher than what was used in their year-end reserve report. And the PV-10, that's the present value of their future cash flows off their P1, just their proved reserves, was $2.7 billion. And this is a company that trades below $1 billion market cap. And companies should not trade. No way should a going concern upstream company trade below book value. And it was trading below book value. Well, now it's about getting closer to book value, but with this merger thing. But I really like it. Up to 91,000 BOE per day of first quarter production. And then they raised their full year production guidance. I think they got a good shot at getting to 100,000 BOE per day by the end of the year. And that's just run two rigs. So if with this merger and with KKR behind this deal, maybe the gas, especially if the gas prices go up, because they both of these companies have some really high quality gas reserves down in South Texas. And here's another thing to remember. It's West Texas. The Permian Basin is bottlenecked when it comes to gas. They don't have enough gas pipelines to get their gas out of the basin. Those wells are being drilled for oil, but they also produce a lot of high BTU gas, really high quality gas, but they can't get it out of there because they don't have a pipeline. Now, South Texas is totally different. South Texas is closer to the Gulf Coast. It's got adequate pipeline capacity, and it also has direct access to several of the largest LNG exporters in the country. Cheniere is adding a third or fourth train down there in Corpus Christi, and they have pipelines directly into Corpus Christi, so they can be selling to those LNG exporters. But they don't have any problems. They get much better price. Their gas prices, actual realized gas prices in the Eagle Ford were like 2.5, 3 times the actual gas prices in the Permian. So that's a big plus for this merger as well.
Well, Dan, it's also fascinating when you look at a merger as to why the companies were valued as they were before it, and how it will look pro forma afterwards. And so when you look at SilverBow, first thing in my mind is, why was it so undervalued? Your thoughts there. But then as they come together and they really move from two small cap companies into a mid cap, do you expect them to have a better multiplier? Because a lot of times mid cap get more analysts, more eyeballs, and they just get a better valuation. How do you see that playing out from why were they so undervalued? And then what could their valuation be combined?
Yeah, both of them are trading for only like 3x cash flow, and that's crazy. You got profitable companies with tons of running room. Yeah, they got a little bit of debt on their balance sheet, but it's definitely manageable. Their free cash flow is more than enough to cover their debt service, and they're both paying down debt pretty fast. In fact, Crescent Energy pays a pretty nice dividend, like a 4% dividend, which they're going to continue. They've already publicly said they're going to continue the dividend after they close this deal. But yeah, it's size matters in this business. And one of the synergies that you get on your, you get better rig rates because you're moving, using more rigs. You get better tubular prices. You get better quality, completion crews and everything. Size matters in this business, definitely. And in South Texas, they're going to be second only to EOG Resources in size in that basin in the Eagle Ford play. And which the Eagle Ford play is turning into the Eagle Ford and Austin Chalk play. The Austin Chalk zone sits right above the Eagle Ford zone. And actually the Eagle Ford is the source rock for the Austin Chalk in most areas. And they're getting really good Austin Chalk wells, horizontal wells down there too. And yeah, it's size matters and is going to get a lot more attention from the Wall Street gang. Actually, if anybody's interested, the first thing I would say do is go to Crescent's Point website and you can listen to the replay of the webcast and you'll see that there's a dozen of the heavy hitters, the really highly respected energy sector analysts were on that call and they were all seemed very bullish. And Raymond James and Truist Financial have both updated their price to increase their price targets on the company. Raymond James is $17. So the near term upside for SilverBow, because the SilverBow shareholders are going to get 3.125 shares for each share of their SilverBow. They're going to get that. If Crescent Point goes to $17, which is Raymond James' price target, you're talking about SilverBow going to what, 58? What is it? 53. 53. So just multiply 17 by 3.125. And that's the near term upside that I see for SilverBow stock when it's converted. And my valuation is actually $63 a share. So then if they, in addition to getting the more Wall Street coverage, if their size just makes people move them to the mid-cap category, there'll be more hedge funds that can invest in them. It builds their investor base. It just opens it up. And I think any analyst or any hedge fund manager that looks closely at this company is going to be very impressed because my pro forma is showing, let's see, that it's going to generate what? Oh, 2.1 billion EBITDA and free cash flow of 650 million. So this is a free cash flow machine for a still relatively small market cap company. Crescent Energy's market cap is just 2.1 billion. That sounds big. We throw billions around, but that still would be a fairly small market cap, and it definitely deserves more attention.
So, Dan, clearly you like this deal. It also sounds like a number of other analysts out there like this deal. Let's just take a step back then, because look, this is a $2.1 billion deal. We have seen a lot of M&A in the energy sector. When you're investing in companies, one, are you looking for M&A transactions to push prices higher? And two, what is your outlook for M&A continuing in the energy sector, especially in the oil sector?
Yeah, there's still a lot of small caps that I think would be attractive targets. And it just depends. At some point, does the management team really want to sell out? There was a special situation here with SilverBow. They had an activist shareholder that was trying to take control of the company. So I think Crescent Energy saw the opportunity to come in there and be the white knight and keep them from getting taken over by a bunch of Wall Street guys. That's a way to look at it. Anyway, yeah, I still think there's more upside. I really think there's some upside in these Canadian companies too that are trading for like ridiculously low prices, if you ask me. And maybe that'll pick up. And with the oil price picking up in Canada because of the Trans Mountain pipeline, that's gives a lot of these guys a nice revenue boost too. But as far as at the conference, one of the things they were talking about is there's really not much open acreage. Like the Permian Basin is now totally leased up, where the only way if a large cap wants to increase their position, the only thing they can do is go buy a company because there's not open acreage that they can go lease.
All right, Dan, we're going to wrap it up here. Always a lot to talk about in the energy sector, but now even more so with the natural gas price moving. And you always bring up a number of companies to us on our monthly calls. We follow along with you at the Energy Perspectives Group, and you do a great job of keeping everybody up to speed on changes in companies, as well as sharing your models and why you have price targets where you do. So again, you can follow Dan at the Energy Perspectives Group. We're also going to have Dan on next month, probably around the tail end of next month. Dan, thank you for taking time on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please be sure to go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Search DKE Report to listen to all of our daily editorials and company updates. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.